Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. We are suiting up for one heck of a race week. We cannot wait to get to Wheatland, Missouri, Shane. And, man, it has been so much excitement over the winter to get things going. But the drama, the battles, I mean, the gloves, I cannot wait till they come off this season.
Ever since Crandon last year when we announced that we were going to Wheatland, you know, we basically found out like 2 hours before everybody else did. You and I found out. Ever since then, I've been looking forward to this coming weekend, the Show Me Off-Road Shootout. I know I said this on the first episode, the winters keep getting longer, and finally, it's here, it's upon us. The baloney stops and the grind starts. We take that first step toward crowning champions in 19 classes.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's going to be one heck of a race season here in 2025. I mean, like you said, the excitement's over the top. I cannot imagine these drivers and these sponsors and fans. What a big year it's going to be. I mean, we're starting in the Midwest and ending out in the West Coast. And I'm telling you right now, the difference, the transitions are going to be huge. It'll be interesting to see who's going to make the tow out to Wheatland. I mean, the track's awesome. I mean, the weather's going to be great, you were talking about. So, I mean, what better way to start the season in May?
Yeah, temperatures at this point, and it's Tuesday night as you and I talk, temps looking to be in the low 70s this weekend. Really slim chance of rain on Sunday. Doesn't look like it's going to be anything meaningful, even if we do get a little sprinkle. Some rain through the area during the week, but that just means a good racy track. Moisture in the track means more grip. Track's going to hold up a little bit better than it would if it was all the way dried out. So, yeah, I mean, conditions are shaping up. It's going to be really great. I've loved watching social media. I know you have been too, the testing videos, but what's gotten me hyped and I've been taking these mental notes is also the new colors, new wraps that all the guys are putting on. And some people, I saw pictures of a few trucks and mod carts and stuff going out for vinyl work today. So a couple teams out there cutting it a little bit close, but man, it's just a very hyped time. Last minute prep. We love it.
Yeah, it's great to see. And social media, that's what makes it so much better for the sport as well, is how close we can stay with these fans and these drivers. And I mean, we're going to have to be on our A game like we love to be. Shane, we're going to have to remember all these new paint jobs and these sticker jobs and who's in what.
That's what practice day is for us.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get down there on late Thursday night. So it'll be one heck of a weekend in Wheatland. I've been there and I can't wait. You were there back in the day in the old track, but man, I'm excited to see your excitement for the track.
Yeah, I've still, you know, I've watched a little video, seen lots of photos of the track, trying to scout it a little bit, but I'm kind of going in blind. I'm going to be in awe, I'm sure, on Friday watching practice and qualifying. You know, the tabletop is a defining feature, I think, for a lot of people. That's the part the fans love, just that huge airtime. You've talked about how standing trackside for that tabletop, you're looking up 25, 30 feet in the air at the bottom of these race trucks. The over-under, it's something that has not been done anywhere else in short course off-road racing. So certainly going to be a lot of drama surrounding that, I'm sure. And when the helmets go on and literally and then figuratively the gloves come off, it's going to be good.
Yeah, and we're at a brand new facility, right? Some of these drivers, guys and gals, have ran here at Wheatland at the Lucas Oil Speedway, but 75-80% of them haven't. So that track time is going to be huge. Some teams got there early and have looked at the track, but also they have been able to test, and you see some great test videos, like you said, to prepare them. But I mean, it's all going to be up in the air. The rhythm section's so cool. Like you said, the over under, but just the speed and the aspect, like we said in our opening podcast, that, you know, you have some of Anago, Lena, and then you have some of Bark River, Crandon, ERX Motor Park as well in this track combined. So, I mean, I don't think body panels are going to really stay on, like I love to say, because there's some tight corners and you really have to be up on the wheel.
Another thing that I think is really exciting is we're going to be putting our product, Champ Off Road, on display in front of probably a lot of new fans. On Saturday night, I should say, on the 3rd, Lucas Oil Speedway, the Oval Track, has their weekly series, the 3rd round of that series. Late models, modifieds, B-mods, and stock cars. So I'm excited to see what's going on that track, but I'm excited for some of those fans to catch wind of what we're doing on the off-road track. you and I have talked to a lot of fans. We know that a lot of times seeing it in person once is all it takes. You get hooked on it to have an opportunity to have that crossover a little bit. I think it's going to be great. We're going to make a lot of new fans, make a lot of new friends.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. You just want to mingle with each and every group of circle track drivers to off-road racers. I mean, they're going to love it. I know that. But, I mean, I was talking to Josh Franklin from back in the day. He used to run Light Buggy. Him and his son race at that dirt track. So they're all excited for off-roads to come back, as well as for them to put on a show for us later on Saturday night. And if you get a ticket to get in the off-road show, you can go right on over to the circle track. So it is literally that close, within walking distance, and the weather's going to be beautiful. And man, I love me some short track dirt track.
You know, talking about fans that'll maybe be seeing us for the very first time, I know I've probably asked you this on this show before, but do you remember your very first off-road race? I don't, because I was an infant, but do you remember, or what's, I guess, your earliest memory of being a fan, getting hooked in this, into this crazy world?
Man, it had to be just watching it on TV, listening to Marty Reed and Larry Rice, and just putting it all together, right? Asking your father if we could get Speed Vision so we could watch it at a young age. I remember 7, 8 years old, maybe, but to be at the track, it was young like you. I don't remember so much, but at 7, 8, 9 years old, just to be by that fence at Crandon or at Bark River, and it's just what we live for, and it just never left our body. That's why you bring in new fans and people, they're just going to be hooked, and hopefully we can drag on some of those dirt track racers into Champ Off-Road.
Well, with that, Brent, we did promise the people during episode number 2 that came out a few days ago that we'd talk about those other sportsman classes, the ones that do have returning champions. Why don't we kick it off with your old stomping grounds back in the day, stock truck. Of course, last year, 10 different drivers won a race, one of those being Scott Belanger filling in for his teammate Brian Piott, who was one of the other 9. That was probably the most competitive single class of racing I've seen, at least as in my adult life, or out of all the classes I can remember. What does it have in store this year? A couple new guys coming in, Justin Coffer, Sean Sosman, both joining the fray. One guy out of the class, Nick Axelson, we talked about him making the jump to Pro Spec, but still a lot of meat on those bones.
Yeah, Shane, stock truck is just one to watch every year, but you talk about guys like Tyler Mullins. He's been very, very quick. I mean, that truck was a smoke show last year, but at the same time, he knows how to get the job done. And I mean, we've seen so many different winners. Rogacheski, he's going to be one to watch. Yeah, Kurt Graff, very, very fast. Like,
defending champion.
Yeah, that's what makes it so interesting, because we never know who's going to win. And you keep moving guys in and out of this division, it's going to be one to watch throughout the season.
Yeah, what was it, the 4th weekend of the year last year before we had a repeat winner? I think we went to the 9th round before we had a driver win number 2 for the season.
Yeah, it was over the top, and I believe we're going to see the same thing going into 2025, because these drivers are hungry. They're ready to rock and roll. It's been a long winter. Seems like it's never short enough for us off-road fans, but stock truck is fun. I mean, limited suspension, we talk about it all the time. They're only 2 shocks per wheel. Not a lot of horsepower, especially you give those guys and girls rein in that division. I mean, it makes it very, very different. It spices up. You have to be a driver. I mean, you look at a lot of drivers in that class. They've been learning not only the tracks, but learning their own equipment. And you see a lot of different trucks in that division.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the improvement for that whole group, really. I mean, I think, you know, the conditions are there that we may see that again, which is just makes it so exciting. Don't sleep on stock truck. You got to get there early enough in the day to make sure you check that one out. Another class that I think was a ton of fun last year, even thinking about especially the second half of the season, 570 side-by-sides. Ridiculously good racing, really competitive. Same thing where you had a group of 6, 7 drivers that were constantly running, competing for wins. Ella Holcher just barely beat out Logan Fritzinger by 1 point for the championship. Logan, of course, moving up through the ranks, so out of the class this year, but we should see Ella out there. Jack Betts is going to be there. He won't be at Wheatland, but plans to run the rest of the year. And a lot of those other fast kids still coming back for the 570s. Again, I think how much that group stepped their game up last year, and how competitive, how physical that racing got, just super fun to watch.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just to think back, what, 2, 3 years ago, you and I were always talking and reminiscing, like, hey, you know, hopefully it's class gains more numbers because it just looked like it was struggling for a while. But now all of a sudden, it really has became healthy. And these drivers are using it as that great transition for a stepping stone going into the next division. You see people progress. And I mean, Jack Betts, bummer he can't make it to the first round, but I'm sure he's going to be one to reckon with throughout the season. And I'm looking for big things out of Ella Holger. I mean, yeah, granted, she won the championship and she's got a big target on her back, but she's consistent, fast, and she don't put up with anything.
Well, let's talk about the other two youth side-by-side classes, in this case, 170s and the 200s. They'll be running on the same track at the same time again this year, but again, two different championships going on there. Ashton Dreher absolutely ran away with the points title in the 170s last year, had 7 wins, and he will be back. So obviously he's the favorite there. Little brother Axel, by the way, moving into a 200. So I think the plan for those two is they feel like they can each win a championship in those respective classes. And it's going to be tough for some of these other kids, but we've seen the growth out of some of these other drivers. Grace Burrows, Peyton Weisbrod had some really good runs last year. Miles Pakenham got his first career win. So what we always see in these youth classes is the talent. These drivers can grow not just as race car drivers, but growing up a little bit from one season to the next. It can change the way they drive, change the way they approach racing, and it's going to be, again, I think a little bit more competitive, especially for Ashton in the 170s.
Yeah, there's a lot of great competition, but I mean, every race we go to, there's 15, 20 cars, and hey, the Dreyers, they always found their way through that pack in that field. They figured out something where those cars are very, very quick, and they adapt to their own vehicles, so it's going to be cool to watch that team try to progress and move into another division. Like you said, it's great for our whole sport and the group. I can't imagine when we were that young, mom and dad had a car for us. We were playing in the sandbox, like we always say. I mean, it's great for the sport, and these drivers aren't just going around in a circle. Granted, they're playing in the sandbox after the races, but when they're on the track, they focus. It's fun to watch, and it's fun to call.
Well, that's a great place to make a segue here, because I think probably our single favorite class to call, as long as we've been working together, this is coming into year 6. It's been Super Stock Truck, fan favorite. If you're a fan of sportsman level racing, there are drivers in this class that you love, and there's drivers in this class that you don't like at all, because everybody from pro drivers, all the fans down to the little kids, everybody's invested some way in Super Stock Truck.
Yeah, they really are. And this class is just one to watch. And it's one of our favorites, we always say, because these drivers go at it. They don't care. It's just like watching the Pro 2 race. If you have Ryan Beat or Keegan Kincaid going at it. You look at the Super Stock Truck division when you have Braden Beauchamp and now Joey Mochosik moving on to Pro Light. That's going to open the door for another guy to slide in that group of 8-9 drivers that can win at any given time. And a lot of guys and girls have been doing their homework going into 2025. So I'm excited. I mean, these trucks, we got to call them Pro Stock by now, because they're definitely not a Super Stock Truck.
Yeah, you talked about I guess what would be the expected points battle. You still got Corey Holcher, who won the championship as a rookie last year. You still got Nick Bing, a former class champion. You've got Braden Beauchamp, who's been in the title fight the last couple of years. Brad Barglin's starting to come into his own. But I think for me, the biggest step forward I saw last year was Colt Wurzba. Got that big win out of the way in Dirt City. We saw the emotion on the podium. Felt like it had been a long time coming for him. I'm looking for him to be part of that title fight as well. I think this will be another class just like Stock Truck, where we got 4 or 5 or more drivers in the points championship hunt when we get down to the end of the year. And that's what we've seen in that class the last couple of years, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. Just the consistency we've seen on a lot of teams. And I'm looking for Nick Bing to have a great season as well. I mean, he's a veteran in the class, been around a long, long time. And I've seen some videos of him testing up and down the street just like he does. And he always is ready to put on his game face, and it's going to be fun to watch. There's a lot of great people behind the scenes, like you said, around the scenes of Superstock, and you better be there to witness it.
So with that, well, it only took us 3 episodes, but we've now officially covered every single class, all 19 of them, in Champ Off Road for 2025. And I put the question out there to you, if you had to pick one out of the 19, which one is going to be must-see entertainment all season long? And then part B of this question, which one is going to be the tightest points battle?
Wow. I want to say pro buggy.
Easy question, right?
Yeah, you could say a lot of different classes, but it's very difficult, like you said. I mean, pro buggy is my race to watch throughout the season. A lot of people wouldn't think that. They'd think I'd pick pro 2, pro 4.
I'm turning you into a buggy guy, I'm telling you.
But the difference is, though, Shane, is that class. It's open wheel. I mean, they're so fast. These drivers are very quick. We have veterans. We have rookies. We have very strong talent. And it's always amazing. They fly around that Wheatland track, I can guarantee you. And on top of it, the closest points battle, I would want to say, in what division? Oh, man, stock truck was so crazy last year. I would want to say...
You remember my notes about the points titles coming into the final weekend last year? Stock truck was like a whole page of just math all by itself.
Yeah, unreal. Like, the gap from first to 10th was just shivers away from, what, 10, 12 points?
Yeah, something like that. It was nuts.
I'd like to say that Pro 2 division is going to be pretty wicked to watch in that points battle. I mean, you had Ryan Beat just come up a little short to Mickey Thomas last year. I mean, you have guys building new trucks, new attitudes. I mean, with Mickey Thomas being out, I think it's going to open the door to allow in that when the Silent Assassin takes off, well, there's a new sheriff in town sometime. I don't know if it'll be early in the season or late in the season. Between Kyle Greaves, I mean, Ryan Beat, Johnny Holger.
Ricky G,
yeah. I mean, 3 wins last year alone. I mean, it's going to be a hell of a points race.
Yeah, I think Pro 2 is my pick. That is must-see TV. It's got to be. The drivers you named, how hungry all those guys are to win a championship. You know, Keegan's won one before, but it's been a while now. Ryan Beat has been close, still hasn't gotten over the hill yet in Champ Off-Road. Ricky G has the speed, searching for the consistency. Johnny Holcher is out with a new truck. You know, certainly he's going to factor into the points battle. Kyle Greaves, coming into year 2 in the class, he showed so much speed, got a lot quicker throughout the year last year, started to find his footing a little bit. You're talking about 5-6 guys. Anytime the green flag goes, one of those drivers could win that race, or we might be surprised and see some other drivers on the podium too. And then for points battle, what do you know about me, Brent? I'm a buggy guy. I think 1600 is going to be down to the final lap of the season. You got the Schultz twins roll off with a new car, Seafelt and Colton Burns. That group, I think, is going to be just at each other's throats all season. So evenly matched, so much talent there. That's going to be super fun. Down to the wire.
Yeah, I couldn't say it any better. I mean, I guarantee you that 1600 class is going to be nail biters every weekend with Fitz going up and moving out of the class and going to do something different. That's going to open the door for a couple other drivers to rub some elbows. And that's what we love to see. We don't want to see the same person win every time. So it's cool when people prep their equipment right. They have their game face on and they have what it takes to run up front, because we love it when it switches winners week to week.
Yeah, those guys always bring their best. You know who else brings their best every time? It's Amsoil, the sponsor of this podcast. If you're a racer or an off-road enthusiast and you demand peak performance in your machines, Amsoil engineers the best innovative synthetic lubricants that will stand up to any challenge you can throw at them. Inspired by aerospace technology, Amsoil was the first to introduce a synthetic motor oil meeting API service requirements, outperforming conventional oils. Trust your high-performance machine with Amsoil and experience the difference that comes from a legacy of excellence and a commitment to pushing boundaries. Amsoil, run with us. Well, joining me now on the Champ Off-Road podcast presented by Amsoil is the Champ Off-Road first-person view drone pilot, Jordan Gomez. Thanks for carving out some time. We were just talking before I hit record about how this begins the busy months for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Shane. Yeah, we were getting ready to hit it and pedal to the metal here. I leave in a couple days. We spend the first weekend down in Missouri. It's going to be my first time flying at that track, by the way.
And I want to ask you about that, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. But first, how did this all start for you? What sparked your interest, first of all, in flying FPV drones? And then, you know, what was the process to realizing that you didn't just have to do it as a hobby, but you could actually monetize it?
Yeah, so I started flying in 2017 and was kind of more of a comprehensive videographer. And then I caught wind of, you know, FPV stuff. And once my traditional drone skills kind of grew, I saw it as a challenge, and it was intimidating because everything was back then was still kind of like on the analog front. So now things are digital. And so it's like, you know, we put on those goggles and flying analog and it looks like an old TV screen with bad reception. So it was a little bit more challenging to, you know, to get that rolling. But I think once I got a grip of, you know, and like true confidence with what I was doing with FPV drones, I knew right away that I wanted to be in the space of motorsports and try to do as much work as I could just chasing, you know. And it really comes down to being a product of my environment. You know, here in the Midwest, we are very flat. We don't have mountains to go diving down, or a bunch of abandoned buildings like places like Detroit or Atlanta have that. So, you know, with those FPV pilots in that area, they tend to be more freestyle pilots because they're going to abandoned buildings. Or you go, you know, you see European pilots doing a lot more long range where they're diving down great, you know, beautiful mountains and stuff like that. So here in the Midwest, chasing, going to ERX, Motor Park, kind of was like, all right, this is, I think, my best shot at trying to dive into something professional and turn this hobby into something real. And so it was, I think 2021, I hit up Andrew Carlson in the ERX family and asked him if I could come through for a test session. Just did my best and submitted it to the champ team and started covering races for somebody else at the time that was flying for you guys, for a champ off-road. Whenever he couldn't make it, I would be there. And then eventually I took it over 2 years ago now. So this will be my third full year.
So were you a motorsports guy, did you have interest in motorsports before you saw the opportunity to fly alongside it?
Oh yeah. So I grew up snowmobiling. I'm from Elk River. So going sure. to ERX and watching snowcross, you know, and I think the most extensive I ever got into anything related to motorsports was riding my Banshee. And then getting some time in at Glamis, you know, really got me more into, you know, more, you know, vehicles with more horsepower, you know, any Tatum, any rail car out there, and really kind of diving in to, you know, seeing like, wow, okay, this is something different down here in the, you know, the southwest corner of the world where these huge sand dunes are. And you got guys coming up from Mexico, San Diego, you know, Arizona, that whole area to come party and rip in the sand dunes. And that was where I kind of started developing my knack for high speed. Their high performance drones and like really pushing the limit with these things and seeing like what they can really do. Yeah, that's kind of, I guess, yes, not like as much as obviously some of these racers guys, but I was into it for sure.
So now that you're flying, you know, as your career, how often are you flying? Like how many days a year are you getting out and actually flying?
Yeah, I think it was about last year that I started to realize that I was probably putting it because let me backtrack here a sec. Just like photography, drones have, you know, FPV drones especially, have kind of shown up and grown into different styles of pilots. Like I had mentioned already, we have freestyle pilots, guys that, you know, do amazing stuff through abandoned buildings. You have chase pilots like myself, you have guys that, you know, chasing high-speed stuff in the desert, doing car commercials, things like that. And you know, most of these guys are all-around pilots, but they tend to focus in on one thing. And then you have guys doing fly-through videos, these one-take videos that we see on, you know, sports networks, things like that. And so like photography, you know, you have a wedding photographer, you have a portrait photographer, you have a landscape photographer. So like drones have now grown into like, okay, you can kind of segregate, you know, where you're going to fit, which niche you're going to, you know, kind of roll into. So that with that being said, you know, we have these different categories. I fell into, instead of being so much of a commercial pilot, which I still do, like, you know, commercial shoots, I don't really dive into movies or TV shows too much. But I do a lot of live broadcasts, right? And so that means indoor football leagues, like the golf thing that I mentioned earlier, and then snowcross and off-road, and then other things that have popped up, some FTV stuff or whatever. And I kind of was last year, kind of realized, I was like, man, I'm putting in some like heavy time on these weekends compared to your average pilot. So it's really hard to, with, you know, without looking at my logs, it's really hard to say. But I would say like, you know, in busy months without practicing or just an average weekend, I'm putting in at least 10 to 12 hours of time in the goggles, you know. And so it's an extensive amount of time. I guess I might be one of the first guinea pigs to seeing the after effects of wearing these goggles with all these frequencies flying around my head. if it's gonna create problems or deter them, we'll see. We'll find out. So far, so good. No serious migraines or anything. As long as I stay hydrated, I'm good.
So how much flying do you do at this point that's purely practice or even just like experimenting? You know, you said you've focused a little bit more on motorsports or live sports broadcasts, but do you still get out and play around in the freestyle stuff a little bit, or flying just, I guess, for the fun of it with no real aim in mind?
Yeah. So, you know, my fleet is, I have an extensive fleet of, you know, over 40 different drones, all different sizes and stuff. And so a lot of my time, let's say, you know, after a weekend of racing for Champ Off-Road, my first thing is coming home and fixing, you know, doing the repairs, if you know, ones that I hadn't done, you know, at the track, or if there's no time to. So a lot of my time goes into actually repairs and making sure that my fleet is checking all the boxes and that they're safe, they're safe aircrafts to fly, and that they're not going to have any problems. So it's gone, so that to answer that question, the time has gone down of like in time that I spend enjoying myself flying, you know, going out, having fun, doing stuff. When you become a working drone pilot, that number starts to go down quite a bit, because you're spending so much time running a business, fixing, you know, making sure the next drone for whatever gig is prepared and ready to rock. So yeah, not as much as you would imagine.
And probably not as much as you wish.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like if I could, I would, you know, fly a big drone, like a big 10 inch every day and rip that thing around the track or something, you know, but it's just the cost of it too, you know? So it would be great if I could get out and freestyle more. And I think, like, perhaps, you know, it's just a matter of doing it. You know, everyone's finding excuses sometimes not to do some things, but there definitely is a way to figure out how to start enjoying the craft a little bit more. And I think the same thing goes for a lot of these guys, you know, that are out there racing. They spend so much time preparing and fixing and stuff, and there's probably some weekends where they don't even want to touch it, you know? And I think that goes with anything that you start as a hobby and turn it into your profession or turn it into a serious craft. You need a break to get back into it again.
Sure. I think that probably happens with anybody that's passionate about anything. I've told people this many times, that at the end of race season, you know, Brent and I, who are extremely close friends, we don't even talk to each other for like 6 weeks after racing season. So I totally get that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you said you have 40-ish different drones. Are they all across the board for different use? And I want you to nerd out a little bit, because,
yeah,
you know, what are the differences in the components or how they're built? Describe that to me. I'm pretty uneducated on this.
A lot of it's like based on technology changes, right? So like before 2020, things were mostly all analog drones. So we were flying, you know, any FPV pilot was, you know, using an analog camera with receivers that you could tap in and see an analog signal, and it would look similar to anyone who's, you know, obviously grown up in the, you know, early 90s and previous. We know what a you know, analog TV looks like with the rabbit ear antennas. So that's kind of what it was. And then we went digital in the early 2020s. And then there's just been like each year, just a new, you know, a new version where it gets better and better, right? So like each craft, either you can choose to upgrade or leave as is. And you know, the whole theory kind of comes into play. Well, you're making money doing it. If it's not broke, you know, don't fix it. But then we're live streaming, so I want to give them the best technology. So I want to use the latest and greatest, right? So that's the internal side of it, of like, are we going analog? Are we going digital? And then there's the different sizes of drones for depending on the project, you know? So if it's like an indoor shoot and we're flying around people, you're going to tend to use a smaller drone.
Sure.
And the drones are kind of classified into the prop sizes. And so when we get down to the drones that fit the size of your hand, those are called like tiny whoops. And you're looking at like 75 millimeter prop size. And then the next size would be a Cinewhoop. You know, from there we go into like 2.5 inch to 3.5 inch props. And those ones are usually the ones that you see with like ducts or protectors around the propellers to, in case you bump into anything or anybody, it's a little bit more safe. And then when you kind of break through 3 inch range, you kind of get more into like open prop. And obviously there's so many variations of all this stuff. You know, these aren't necessarily hard rules, but, but you get into 3 inch, 4 inch, the 4 inch really doesn't exist. And then there's 5 inch, which is a really common size, which a lot of guys use for freestyle and chasing and stuff, especially at like drift tracks. And then that can carry a GoPro. And once you start getting beyond 5 inch, then you're kind of starting to go more towards performance in terms of like, okay, could I use a different type of battery, like a lithium ion battery on a 7 inch prop or a 10 inch prop to get me more than 10 minutes of flight so that I can get on all the way up to 15,000 feet and back down in less than 15 minutes, you know, and then, or chasing at a high speed, like we do at Champ, and getting at least 5 minutes ripping with these guys. So I coming in and pitting, you know, and And it's a variation of prop size, motor size, type of battery, and then ultimately your tuning, because these drones have to be tuned or else they just be sloppy and wouldn't perform right, just like a car, you know. And then you start breaking into, you know, 8-inch all the way up to, I would say, maybe 14-inch propellers where it can carry huge cameras. Your payload, you're looking at payloads that are, you know, up to 15 pounds. Wow. Some of them even greater. And those are like, you know, two-person operations most of the time. I'd love to utilize some of those drones at some of these practice sessions. I've done it a couple of times with Andrew Carlson, just because Elk River is so close. I can be like, yeah, dude, can I come check, you know, test this? And he's like, yeah, we're ripping, you know, some, you know, whatever day's next week. And I'm like, sweet. And I show up with a huge rig and get some amazing footage that looks obviously cinematic compared to an action camera. So really, it's like, it's just a, you know, play of like you kind of said, like, it depends on the gig, you know, on what we're building. And I've found that the 6-inch is actually really great for what we're doing at off-road. And it's kind of the best of both worlds of like, compared to a 5-inch and a 7-inch. 5-inch is going to be more nimble and kind of like get up to speed pretty quick. Whereas like a 7-inch, its pros are, it gives you longer flight time. And if you really tune it in good, you can get some good speed out of it. So I kind of found myself in between both at the 6-inch size. And so that's pretty good for me. And so my goal this year is actually to design my own. It's kind of in the works already, but to come up with my own frame for a 6-inch build and start utilizing that at our races. And that kind of was spawned because we're dealing with, in the drone industry, with all these tariffs and supply chain issues with right. China and everything. Like, we're actually, I believe, the first industry. I know we're a very small industry or very niche, but we're definitely the first one to get hit from all this. And so it's caused already some issues for me with cost and figuring out what I'm going to do with getting backup parts, you know, in time, because there's some companies that just don't want to ship to the US anymore. And then there's some where they're not, you know, it's just harder to get those parts, or the cost is so high. It's like, oh, I might as well just start cutting my own carbon fiber and, you know, creating my own parts. So it's an interesting time right now with what's going on with our tariff issue and drones, and seeing what kind of, you know, shakes out. A lot of it is cost and seeing what these Chinese companies are going to offer us, you know, at a reasonable price.
So how many different, or maybe they're all the same, but I know you bring, you know, multiple rigs to the track, but are you bringing a couple different sizes of them? Just what I'm kind of thinking about is, like, short course carts go 35 miles an hour, pro fours on Crandon 110 into turn one. Mm-hmm. Do you have to fly two different machines just to that'll work better for each extreme there?
You totally could. It would be more stuff for me to lug around. So I found myself just using a six inch frame. I, you know, bring at least three to five, depending on what, you know, my preparation for the weekend or how the week went, or if I have a backup part. But I tend to just stick with a 6-inch. And so in order to negate, or I guess in order to determine how fast the drone's going to be flying, what helps is to understand that the FPV camera is fixed, meaning it's not like a traditional drone, like a DJI drone. I know a lot of people are familiar with Mavics, so we'll talk about the Mavic quick. That's like more of a traditional DJI drone that has a camera on the bottom, you know, where it's on a gimbal. And no matter where you're flying, the camera looks horizontally balanced, versus an FPV drone. The camera that I'm seeing through the goggles is what you guys are seeing, and that's fixed. So the angle of that is like 20 to 30 degrees. And if that's like chasing the faster stuff. But if I'm going to chase the 170s or, you know, carts, now my cart's kind of ripped, so I kind of tilt that one up a little bit. But, you know, the slower stuff, I'll, you know, keep that angle at like 10 degrees. Or for example, snowcrafts, they're going from, you know, 5 miles an hour to 45 miles an hour in a matter of seconds. So it's hard to figure out what angle to fly at. So I kind of fly at a more flatter angle and simply just try my best to keep up, because they're catching air and a lot more frequently. So it's kind of like figuring out exactly like this max speed of what vehicles you're going to be chasing and what class. And then I adjust the angle of the camera on each drone before I send it. So I can use any size rig essentially to chase small, you know, fast or I should say the slower stuff, but I just stick with one, or else I'd be carrying around different batteries, different propellers, just more gear in, you know, in general. So it helps to just have the one 6-inch rig.
So you mentioned this a little while ago, you know, you've obviously never shot off-road at Wheatland. I've never called races there, so we're both going to be, I guess, learning as we go. But what does that process look like the first time you fly at a new racetrack? Are you dry running it, you know, flying alone out there on Thursday when you get there, or looking at videos of the track, trying to get the lay of the land, or how does that work?
Yeah, you start with the Google Earth to kind of see the grounds and see obstacles, see where the trees are, see what the layout of the, you know, that facility obviously has more than just the short course track. So, you know, we're next to, the boat area.
Lake Lucas, it's called.
Yeah, that makes sense. Lake Lucas. And then the oval track. So I do that, and then I kind of see what's been shot, you know, and I kind of go through Instagram or I go through YouTube and see even what the camera looks, even what like stuff looks like from inside of a side-by-side or whatever UTVs out there, whoever has somebody posted. And then there has been, obviously there's been races there in the past. I think the one that I found was from, was it 2021? There was a good video, just some, you know, some short course stuff happening with Pro 2s. And so I can kind of reference that and determine like, so far, okay, so what I have determined from watching all of that is it seems like it's a fast track. I think we're going to be seeing some speeds there that are, you know, I don't know if I can compare it, maybe similar to like Bark River, you know?
Sure.
It seems like it's a little faster, you know, there's some like wide open areas, and this was a generally longer course, and that jump is gnarly. That one back, that jump in that back section, I'm really excited about, but some of those trucks have been getting some mad air.
Yeah, that's what that Brent said. We have to make sure... him and I, he wants to bring me kind of track side on that side of the track to watch during practice, because basically you're looking at the underside of a truck that's 30 feet off the base level of the track.
It's definitely some, you know, some new obstacles for me, the tunnel being one of them that might lend to some cool shots.
You gonna fly through it?
Oh yeah. I think the one big question right now is where am I going to be stationed, you know? So safety first, it can't be too much around people. And just trying to figure out where I'm going to be. I know some people have seen it. You've seen it. The van that I have would be a great option, but I don't think I'm going to be bringing it down. Season's starting too quick for me to get it all in order and have it down there in time. I'm a one-man show, so I'm just trying to look at costs and figure out, you know, what's going on. So I'll probably be stationed on top of a TV truck. The second option might be some sort of scissor lift. But that's always the case. You know, early on, I think at Crandon, we were on top of the octagon. And so we could never really get down to that, was it the Christie corner, that corner that hooks left?
Yeah, the Argonne corner and the Cowboy corner.
Yeah, like I could never really reach that. But now, you know, with the van, now that we, you know, I can get that in that area, I can get most of the track. You know, it's just a matter of what the wind situation's like. Is it going to be smart for me to burn batteries that fast just getting one lap? You know, because if I'm going to rip a whole lap in its entirety at Crandon, I'm looking at with one battery, maybe a lap and a half to two laps, and then I got to come in and pit. It's all about figuring out, like, doing the job, helping to tell the story. So I think with Wheatland, it's going to be that first day of practice on Friday, you know, doing a lot of tests and figuring out what's possible. And so I kind of ease into it. So, you know, at Wheatland, I'll be wherever I'm going to be, I'm going to figure out, just fly slow on the outside of the track and see where my signal bounces, you know, of like where it dips. But from what I've seen, I've kind of like found some other drone videos and determined like, okay, they can reach this corner over here, you know. So far, I don't see any serious issues, but we'll see when we get there.
You've brought up your pit stops a couple times. I've never gotten to actually see it, but I know that you're swapping batteries a few times a race, especially during the longer pro races.
Yeah.
What does that process actually look like? Like you said, you're a one-man show. What's the process of landing, doing whatever you have to do, getting the drone back in the air, and how long does it take?
Yeah, so basically I got a bunch of data in my HUD, in my goggles. I can see my telemetry. I can see my battery. I can see how much time the drone has been armed and flying. And so I kind of like know, like a lot of these tracks obviously have spent some significant time at. So sometimes I don't even have to look at my time. I just know, you know, and I can feel the throttle's not as hot as it was. My battery's getting lower. And I know there's two laps left. If I come in and pit right now, I'll be able to finish the race with these guys. If I don't, I'm going to be hanging on and probably might not get the last half of the last lap, you know, or I might have to just hang the drone for a second in a corner and wait for them to get the finish half the track, and then so that I can get the last half of the finish or whatever. So it's a lot of figuring out like okay, where am I in terms of, or where are the races at, right? Knowing, listening to you and my, listening to you guys talk, and then listening to our direct, our TV director as well, knowing like, okay, they're on, you know, there's four laps left, let's go pit. And then I, so I, you know, bringing the drone back, and it's as fast as I can be. And as I get the drone back, you know, it's managing, basically managing battery charging the whole time while I'm out there, and just putting the, taking the battery off, putting it on and letting it start up, do its sequence, which is about 30 seconds. So from the time that I land, grabbing the drone, taking the battery off, putting a new one on, I lose about 40 seconds. And then I kind of, while it's booting up, I give it, a once over, look at the propellers, make sure nothing's crazy loose or coming undone, or the propeller's not ripped, you know, or starting to rip. There's a lot of times where I've been trying to get really gnarly when I have a lot, for some reason, Corey Winter loves to throw rocks at my drone. I think he's probably, out of like all the racers, he's the one that has shredded my props the most.
The shots where, you know, you catch a little dirt on the lens, or you can tell that something upset the drone, I think that's like everybody's favorite drone shot except yours.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, right? Like, I mean, it's kind of like everyone cheers when people crash. Do we like that? I don't know, you know, but it's it's definitely leads towards a fun scenario. I think, was it last year at Dirt City, Henderson was coming over. He finished first, and I led off. I like followed him through the finish, and we had some heavy winds that day, and I let off my throttle just a little too much and kind of like didn't follow through with my finish the way I should have. And I like leveled out a little bit, and he like bumped right into me, and it hit his like front right fender, went down. And then it happened. It was at the end of the race, like really, Jordan, like, you know, like crash, like that whole race was awesome, but you had to crash right at the end. And so I ran into Jimmy, and that's my first time ever getting hit by a truck in the air, you know, or actually like hitting a truck in general. And then CJ landed on me. And so I had one of the impulse guys, like, see him walking over with my drone just in shambles, all wrecked. I was like, oh man. But yeah, no, it happens. You know, ERX is unforgiving track. The elevation changes. There's a lot of roosts in some of those corners. You know, I do like the variation of dirt on that track, but there's, you know, it, that one for some reason is yeah, very unforgiving. Dirt City is my, I know it's not everyone's favorite track, but it is my favorite to fly because there's just a lot more action, the tighter corners, and allows me to get a little bit more like spicy with the drone. Versus Crandon, it's just a lot of like holding the long throttle and, you know, that speed and like
right.
Just getting that shot. And so there's like so much variation I can do. Obviously, it's a challenge to fly at Crandon, but I think Bark River, that for me, my biggest challenge there has been the winds. For some reason, that little valley, it's always lending us some odd weather, not very consistent weather. You know, I think last year we dealt with some rain and high winds. And reception can be kind of tricky because you have the most of the course on one side and you have that big stretch on the back that's just wide open and it's kind of on a different elevation change. So my reception isn't that great. But yeah, so yeah, pitting, to get back to it, it's as fast as I can swapping. And so for Pro 2s and Pro 4, they go through about four, on average, about four batteries a race. And so that's kind of like, again, like I'm dealing right now, I'm flying a drone frame that's already pre-existing and designed by somebody else that isn't doing what I'm doing. So my idea with creating something is to be able to manage that swap where I don't have to wait 40 seconds. I can wait. You know, it's just a matter of me connecting another power source to keep the system booted while I swap the battery, put the battery back in, unplug that power source, and I don't have to wait for the boot up sequence.
So you could be down and back up in like 20 seconds.
As fast, or as long as it takes me to grab it, put the battery in, and put it back on the launch deck.
Is that something you're like practicing on the workbench at home?
No, I think
you've done it enough times.
I think I've done it enough. Yeah. I kind of, you know, early on, you know, my heart was pacing and, you know, adrenaline, you know, I'm not in the car with these guys, but I'm out there with them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the story and what went on that weekend or what's, you know, the day before that race, knowing that there's some tension between two racers and you guys are talking about it, but I'm there with it. And I know what's happening. And so like my adrenaline gets going too at times.
I was going to actually bring that up because Brent and I, we're good at it now because we've been doing it for a while, but for us, it's basically 18 adrenaline spikes the whole day. I mean, one race starts, our heart rates get up, goes through the roof for 14 minutes. And then there's a commercial, there's that lull, we calm back down, but we're really tuned in with that where we're used to it. And if something throws that rhythm off, then it becomes tougher. Do you deal with the same thing where, you know, you get that 5 minutes of relaxation time, maybe grab a bottle of water and then the green flag's about to go? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a lot of things that are kind of going through my head. It's like air traffic control in a sense, or, you know, if you've ever watched a bartender at a really busy bar trying to deal with 50 guests, you know, there's so many things going on in their head, and even air traffic control. And for me, it's the same. I'm looking, you know, I'm thinking about the weather. I'm thinking about the sun. Do I have to change my settings in the camera? Because things change in 15 minutes, you know, in between each race, all of a sudden I need to put a different filter on my camera to make sure the shot looks good. So I got to make sure to remember that before we go up next. Maintaining batteries the whole time, and, you know, charging four at a time. And then obviously overlooking the drones and the propellers and making sure things are snug and not breaking, aren't falling apart. And then obviously the safety of just being, you know, being in the pilot in command at a huge live event. And so the adrenaline, so like, you know, that's the job, you know, but like what you're saying is like, okay, we got this big race starting. I think the first year I definitely had that at every race. I think my nerves have kind of shaken out a little bit now, where it allows me to kind of zone in. And I start to feel that what you're talking about through your guys' commentary, knowing that things are intensifying, right? As the race is going on. And even our TV director, he gets pretty animated as well. And he'll get stoked about stuff. And then I kind of lock in, or I kind of like, there's a lot of moments where I lock in, right? I don't necessarily tune everything out, but things get really quiet. And obviously I'm still hearing the engines ripping by me and stuff, but
it's like a flow state.
Yeah, exactly. I get into a flow state on the track and just start riding with somebody. And as long as I can, or until I'm told to turn around and catch somebody else, you know, and it just depends, you know, some guys I really love following them because they're consistent, you know, I'll stick with them for a while. Or if I know that they're doing really good, even if they're up front, it's can lead to some really cool footage and great tracking for the show, you know.
Did you pick up on some of that pretty fast, like the differences in guys' driving styles? Because you know, you have front row seats a lot of the time to how they handle the track conditions, how they're making their way around the race course. Have you picked up a lot from drivers? Like, you understand that you can maybe fly differently next to CJ compared to like even Johnny Greaves, two different driving styles.
Yeah, for sure. I think if I want to catch something entertaining, I'm going to stay behind Johnny. if I'm going to, you know, it's just a matter of like knowing what the track is too. Like it might be kind of harder for some people who don't, obviously there's not a lot of guys that are flying drones like this on these tracks, but you know, whatever the track conditions are and whatever the racers are feeling for the track conditions, like, it's a really track is turning into crap, or, you know, it's really wet or it's starting to get really dry, you know, whatever. I feel it too, because I'm flying with them. So when they feel it, that it's there, you know, that corner is really rough. Like, I'm feeling it too, because like, I'm like an extension of what they're doing on the track. And, you know, my corners are, I'm following their corners. I'm, you know, essentially ghost racing them. And so however they're feeling the course, I'm feeling it the same way. So it just depends on the track. And then also like, I kind of know who's having a good weekend and who's stoked and who's done good. I think, you know, going into my third year, I would have a good feeling of who's going to be doing well. That, you know, after seeing practice, or, you know, just a general, you know, energy about their weekend or coming off of the last weekend, you know, I kind of get stoked about it. But again, you never know what happens. Somebody blows the belt on their UTV and there goes that weekend for them. So it just depends, I guess, really who it is and what class. But there's some guys I've definitely gotten used to for sure.
Well, man, what you've done so far for our coverage in Champ Off-Road and Snowcross, and I know I've told you this, but I think it's really groundbreaking and a sign of bigger things for the future. Where would you like to see this go to make it even better in terms of just covering short course off-road?
Well, I think the drone thing is pretty epic. It's just a matter of cost. You know, we could build cameras on these drones and, you know, make the quality of the video amazing, but then we're flying $10,000-$12,000 rigs with dirt flying at us that might get, you know, might go down in a corner, and, you know, that's expensive. So, you know, until that day comes where it's a lot cheaper or some new technology comes out, I'm still going to be flying with these 6 inches. And I think it's just a matter of really finding that, you know, staying consistent with the program. And, you know, I think with this third year coming on, that makes me the longest vetted pilot with the series. So we're starting to build the program to where product that they're buying for drone is dependable in quality, And, you know, there might be guys that show up and could do some certain things a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, like, I'm going to be there. You know, I don't plan on quitting it, you know. So it's just a matter of continue to use the drone, not only as like a great, you know, line of sight for the fans and for, you know, for TV, but as a tool too for some of these sportsman kids, you know, trying to work with Bob Nash and his youth program to see if I can get out on some of these practice weekends with them where I can track these youth racers, and so they can see their lines differently and use the drone as more of a learning tool than just something that captures some badass footage. And so I think that's kind of like the goal this year. I don't know if there's, you know, if I'm going to essentially make it to any of these practice weekends, but that's in talks right now with Bob Nash, and to see if we can make something happen and kind of help bring more to sportsmen. So you'll see. So this year we're going to make some changes to what's being filmed for sportsmen as well. So I'll be out there for about 5 races each day, each race day with sportsmen. And that's something we haven't done before. So we're still, you know, still growing, but, you know, within reason, and then seeing what the take is on it with the sportsmen, you know, families, and if they like the drone and want to use it for, you know, as a tool as well. Cause I feel like learning, man, that's, you know, it's great to see your lines.
Pro drivers have known the value of that for a few years now. I know that there's a handful of guys. I know AC, Andrew Carlson, was one of the early ones to really adopt that and really dive in headfirst at, you know, getting that overhead shot. What really is the value that you can bring? You know, what do racers get out of it that they don't get out of a trackside video?
Yeah, I think, well, it just depends on what they got in their rig. You know, I know, like, you know, a lot of these pro guys will have some crazy technology so they can see exactly what's going on with everything in their vehicle. And so that maybe the drone footage isn't needed for them. You know, they know how their suspensions work and whatnot. But I think for someone in the youth class who's still figuring out what racing means, you know, you can sit in a simulator all day. But once you see a drone perspective from above, you can see what's going on behind you and communicating with your, you know, your spotter, and, you know, like, okay, I was telling you to do this at that moment. The drone's going to allow you to see exactly what was being talked about, you know? And so to go back and review the footage, it's kind of like any football team. They always have a camera that's 50 feet in the air on, you know, boom. And they go back and watch their practices later. And it's, you know, I think that's the best thing that the drone can do, outside of obviously showing the fans a really, really cool shots and stuff on the back section that they can't see very well. Like I said, I think that's the goal for this year. What I want to bring on a platter, bring the drone program to the sportsmen and be like, here you go, guys, let's do some more work with this stuff. You know, let's really utilize it versus just having it something cool that's out on the track.
So any youth parents or teams of those drivers, they want to find out more about that, should they be reaching out to Bob and Cole at NextGen, or should they be reaching out to you, and how can they find you?
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends if they want to, you know, be a part of, you know, NextGen program. Obviously Bob can, you know, it's Bob's thing, so they can go to them and talk about it. The more it's requested, and, you know, we can see what the calling is for it. But yeah, any race weekend, I've had a lot of parents hit me up on Instagram, or they've reached out to Megan because she's kind of the point of contact and got my info, and I kind of work with them on their needs and what they want to do for their weekend. And so Instagram's always a good call. You know, if you got the Instagram, it's Air Jordan FPV, AirJordan FPV. Otherwise, you know, it's, we all kind of know each other, so I'm sure somebody can get a hold of me, and you know where to find me on the track too. That's the other thing, is you see the drone flying, you'll be able to tell where it's landing and taking off from.
Well, hey man, I'm really excited. You know, from listening to my race calls, how much I love youth racing. So it's great to get some more support, some more tools at the hands of those teams. And I know I've told you this before, but I so appreciate what you're doing for Champ Off Road. I think it's truly groundbreaking stuff. I really think it's a matter of time before this kind of coverage is on major sports. I know that, you know, close quarters crowds are kind of probably a sticking point there, but I think we're kind of living in the future in Champ Off Road, and we're spoiled for it.
Yeah, I you know, it was the first race series, I believe, if somebody can correct me, I believe it was the first race series ever to put on a drone, on, you know, to broadcast a drone and start building a program around it. I know there was a lot of drift tracks that, you know, had guys flying to get cool footage, but nothing that was intertwined and incorporated into a live production.
Yeah, man. And I also can't tell you how many times a weekend, Brent and I'll be calling a race. It'll cut to your shot, and we're like elbowing each other, like, holy cow, this is awesome. Yeah. We're sitting on CJ Greaves' roof right now, watching him race. It's great.
Yeah. Is there any, like, do you have any recollection of favorite drone shots that you remember over the past couple of years, or you're like, oh, I remember this one shot? Is there anything for you that sticks out?
This will kind of out me as a lowbrow fan, but the most memorable ones for me, and again, you know, we're calling 18, 19 races a day, but it's the ones where the dirt hits the lens.
Yeah, right.
So
makes it a little harder to fly home, but yeah, I get it.
But yeah, it adds such a great element, so much more immersive for fans. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it was, I think, my first full year with Champ, and it was Leduc's last year racing, and I caught an amazing race with him.
Are you thinking of the race where he was parked on the K-rail and then came storming back and won it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's I think everybody, you know, for one reason or another, remembers that race extremely well.
Yeah, and he was like, you know, I think he started getting into my view around like P4 or 5, and then he just ripped up and bumped Carlson out of the way and started just shooting everybody out of the way. And the next thing you know, he finishes, or he got from like, I think P4 to the first place in like two and a half laps or something, you know. And that was pretty awesome. Awesome to witness, for sure.
Well, hey, man, I really, really appreciate you coming on to the podcast. Look forward to seeing you this weekend. It's Monday night as we record this, so I'll see you in, what would that be, 3 sleeps, I believe.
3 sleeps. Can't wait. Sounds good. Yeah, thanks for having me, and look forward to it. It's going to be a great year, great season, so it's going to be a good one.
No doubt. Well, Brent, with that, the time has finally come. There's nothing left to do but to do it. The Show Me Off-Road Shootout, the opening rounds of the 2025 Champ Off-Road season are finally upon us. Again, weather looks to be on our side, at least for Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be a great weekend. I can't wait to get to it.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. I can't wait to head on out to Green Bay and then go to Kansas City with you, buddy. It's going to be fun. Just the start of the weekend. Can't come soon enough. And we wish all the racers and fans and family and friends all the best of luck here in 2025. Let's get it going.
Absolutely. You can catch us live for opening ceremonies Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Central Time on Flow Racing. You don't want to miss it. It all starts now. Once again, he's Brent Smith. I'm Shane Stetsny. This has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. We will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.
Yeah.